Welcome to the Revolutionaries of Wellbeing podcast. I'm host Sarah McGuinness. The Revolutionaries of Wellbeing, or RO, helps leaders to be change makers and to create better workplaces. With a community of champions from organizations around the globe, RO is dedicated to helping you to develop your professional expertise, access practical tools and resources, and network with peers and experts to meaningfully improve wellbeing. These interviews are recorded as part of our monthly Wellbeing Wednesday webinars and are designed to inspire, share ideas, and raise awareness of important issues we can all take action on.
Yeah, I often think back and particularly one situation which arose in our business where, you know, we had a near miss and the individual involved, it really brought hit home for me because it was probably the first time I'd been kind of close to a situation like that, knowingly.
Wellbeing starts at the top of an organisation, which means we need senior leaders to be committed and engaged. So how can you influence leaders in your workplace? In this episode, we talk to a leader who is more than walking the talk. Hugh Goddard, Managing Director at Pipeline and Civil, is a role model for embracing and leading a people-first culture. We'll talk about the role of senior leaders in being a champion for wellbeing, and we'll explore how wellbeing advocates can influence up. We'll also look at some of the challenges of wellbeing in the construction sector and how Hugh has tackled these head on.
It'll take me a few minutes to get over my imposter syndrome being referred to, of course, as a senior leader, but because, you know, I still feel like I'm a young graduate running around with a dumpy level and whatnot. But yeah, obviously been in the industry in construction for over, I'd say 22 years, a little bit more as a student as well. I'm a civil engineer by training and did my training over in Ireland. As you detect from my accent, I'm not from New Zealand, although I could be sometimes confused with someone from Southland because of how the R's roll. But definitely not from there. And I've been in New Zealand on and off about 22 years as well. So came over to play a bit of rugby in the King Country and met a girl, and the rest is history. So four kids later, and between the ages of 16 and 8, so they certainly keep us busy. Joined Pipeline and Civil just under 10 years ago. I was working prior to that with a number of large tier one contractors and other businesses overseas in Ireland, the UK, and I had the opportunity to travel internationally quite a bit as well in the likes of the Middle East and Scandinavia, Eastern Europe, and the UK working. Had a few experiences in North Africa as well, chasing some work. So really got a great sort of feel for different cultures and operating in different environments through that experience. And then came back to New Zealand and at one point had the opportunity to join Pipeline and Civil, which was, it still is a medium-sized business. At that stage, we had about 45 team members in the company, and it's an employee-owned business. So quite a different feel for a contracting business. Currently, we've got 18 shareholders in our business, all of whom work in the company in different roles, including frontline supervisors, engineers, project managers, and the senior team. I'm the major shareholder currently in the business, and managing director, and we've got a few associated companies. I'm also on the board of another business in the King Country, back where I started my journey in New Zealand, which is called Informax Construction, and they focus on road maintenance and construction work in that central North Island. I'm on the board, luckily to be appointed onto the board of Chasins as well, which is Construction Health and Safety New Zealand, and very proud to be representing the civil sector on that board, which is a voluntary position, a voluntary board really, and the organisation is all about trying to improve health and safety outcomes in the sector. Quite involved as well in the Civil Contractors New Zealand organisation, chair of the Auckland branch currently as well here. So, involved in lots of discussions and conversations around the industry and how we can, make things better, I guess, going forward.
Sounds like an incredibly busy calendar on your end with the number of things you're involved in. It's really impressive. Look, let's start with talking about construction as an industry before we dive into wellbeing, because in and of itself, it is a complex industry. There are lots of challenges, lots of pressures. What are you seeing? And right now, of course, with where we're at with the economy and the various pressures around small business in the construction sector, there's quite a few that have gone under recently. What are some of the broader pressures that you're seeing people are under in the construction industry?
Yeah, look, I think it's no secret that it's a challenging sector. You know, there's a very a big focus on lowest price procurement, which drives, you know, certain behaviours, drives certain pressures around, you know, cost pressures, time pressures, pressure on delivery. And that just creates stress, you know, and anxiety, you know, amongst, I guess, the team and those people working in the sector. And obviously that's kind of quite evident in the mental health statistics and the suicide rates that are in construction. So, you know, it's very much front and center for the industry as a whole as how we address some of these challenges. It can also be quite, you know, confrontational as well, you know, viewed as quite a confrontational sort of sector where, yeah, you've got, you know, quite competing demands between clients and contractors, consultants and throughout the supply chain, you know, with various trades, if you like, working in different sites and all have their own kind of objectives they're trying to achieve and things like that. So, you know, and it's also generally, you know, because of the cost pressures and various things like that, quite a, you know, fairly thin margins sort of at play as well. So a few, you know, one or two mistakes and, you know, your profit's sort of out the gate. So, you know, all those sorts of things, I think, combine to make it quite a challenging industry. And it really requires a lot of teamwork from clients all the way through to, you know, the small companies, which form the majority of the industry itself. You know, over 90% are small businesses. You know, it just requires everyone to have that kind of mindset around how can we challenge some of these things that we're doing and the system that we're operating in to make it a bit better for people to thrive, you know, and really try and drive towards that goal.
Mm. So with that in mind, were those some of the things that were sitting in your head in terms of thinking, well, wellbeing is something I'd like to put some focus on and some energy into?
Oh, yeah. Look, I think just unlocks a lot of potential. And I think, you know, wellbeing in itself, you know, is a real, you know, positive focus in order to build engagement. And obviously with engagement comes, you know, productivity gains, you know, all the good ideas coming through from the people on the front line who are doing the work. And I think, you know, I guess it's about good work. It's about thriving work and I guess meaningful work where people have a purpose and also striving for personal improvement in their own situation. And you know, linking into, you know, self-actualization. And through having a purpose in work. So I think there's a lot of reasons why I'm passionate about it, because I kind of see the link between people moving forward in their own careers and developing new skills and passion, having passion for what they do and business outcomes, improving business outcomes, which ultimately is going to be good for everyone. So, you know, I think and a key, I guess, enabler of that is creating a psychologically safe kind of environment, which then unlocks those wider business benefits, because without that, people won't come, you know, forward with the ideas, you know, that can unlock efficiency gains and obviously improve well-being in general. So, you know, I think there's a lot of good reasons to sort of lean into this area.
Sounds like you have a really broad and also deep understanding of the impact that focusing on well-being can have on a business. I imagine it's been a bit of a journey for you. So where did you start with understanding what well-being was, understanding what your own definitions were, and then starting to look at your organization through those eyes? What was that journey like for you?
Oh, look, it's an interesting question. I guess for me, you know, I've certainly been in the vice, so to speak, and throughout my career in terms of, you know, having those pressures applied and being in roles where, you know, I felt those pressures and probably, you know, there was an absence of that care, you know, and, you know, I think over the years, just getting more involved in leadership, getting in front of more and more people within the business and other companies that I've worked within and in the wider sort of environment and understanding, having those conversations and getting to know people and what kind of drives people has brought that to the fore in terms of, well, if we can harness some of these areas where we're actually demonstrating that care and that kind of commitment to supporting that we can unlock some of those benefits that not only kind of improve business outcomes, but also sort of improve individual, you know, achievement and where people are at in their own lives, you know. So I guess that kind of evolved over time. through, I guess becoming more involved in those sorts of performance discussions or, performance reviews or goal setting discussions and linking the objectives of individuals with the objectives of the organization and trying to kind of drive that link so that we can see those benefits come through.
And I just want to pass to actually one of the questions. So we had one of our participants send through some excellent questions, which are supplementary to some that I had looked at. So I do want to ask one of the first questions here, which was, how did you identify wellbeing as a focus for the company and why? So I guess it's an extension of what you were just saying, but were there some really clear markers or things that you looked at and went, oh my goodness, we absolutely have to make this a focus? Or as it?
Yeah, I often think back, and a particularly one situation which arose in our business where we had a near miss with suicide, and the individual involved, it really hit home for me because it was probably the first time I'd been kind of close to a situation like that knowingly, and it really sort of hit home to go, actually there's a bigger conversation to be had here, and mental health, needs to be more brought into the forefront, and we need to try and normalize the conversation around this and make it less stigmatized. And obviously, there was a general movement around that time as well in terms of the wider industry and wider society, I guess, in order to do that, and which I really bought into. So, at that time, we were looking at, I recall we'd been involved in the Business Leaders Forum steering group, and having some conversations around priorities and an area that we could focus on, and I felt strongly that that was something that we could be doing, not trying to take credit for what happened afterwards. And obviously, the forum did some great work following on from that, and mentally healthy work, and creating some really good models and frameworks, which tried to make sense of some of these areas and how we can start to normalize that discussion amongst the team. And I think that to me was probably a bit of something that jumps out at me as a seminal kind of moment. Yeah.
And that normalizing in construction is a really interesting area, right? Because typically well-being isn't something that's welcome necessarily. It's a little bit of a take a cup of concrete style. Yeah. So how have you found influencing that discussion and getting people to open up?
Yeah. Oh, look, it was a really challenging, it's a real challenge, there's no question about it. It's not an easy road, but it's a very worthwhile endeavor. Found that it's you do get that kind of folded arms, people sitting back in their chair sort of vibe when you start the journey. But over time, you just persevere with it. I think what we did in our business, which I think worked quite well, was get somebody who's really, really tough and, bring them in and get them to share their mental health journey. And in our case, we actually got a UFC fighter by the name of Shane Young, and I'm sure he won't mind me sharing this because he's a real mental health advocate. And he had his own battle with depression and actually came along to one of our company meetings and shared his journey. And this is a guy who gets into an octagon and a pair of undies, basically, and goes at it with another human until someone's on the floor and can't kind of get up. So in terms of the scale of toughness, I suppose, or the image that you'd have of somebody who's got that macho, and I suppose construction is very male dominated, as you know, and obviously there's a lot of efforts going into change that, but that's where it's at the moment. So, reaching the males in the industry who typically wouldn't want to go there, it's just trying to figure out your audience, see what kind of avenues you can bring in there and things that will make links. And that was quite successful because actually at the end of that session, Shane offered up a couple of tickets to the next fight to a few of our team if they were willing to come up and share their stories. And we had a couple of quite influential people in the business you know, get up the front and share their stories. And there was, you know, tears shed and things like that, which really made an impact and got people, you know, thinking a bit differently around the conversation, where previously it was on, oh, I'm not going to open up about that. Whereas, you know, I had, you know, more and more discussions happening where people were willing to, you know, share, at least admit that they were, you know, struggling or had times when they were. And because everybody does, right, you know, and it's mental health is everyone's on a spectrum from either, you know, thriving through to, you know, struggling. And we're all on that journey somewhere in between those two points. So at various different times. So it's about acknowledging that it's actually normal. Everybody has it. It's not just those people over there who have mental health challenges, for example, and well-being challenges. So, you know, it's about just making it a normal part of the conversation. And when you're saying, oh, how, you know, how are you, you know, and actually, well, actually, how are you, you know, and feeling like it's okay for people to go, well, yeah, I'm not great today. I'm a bit off today because of this or that, and just having a conversation about it. And that's okay, you know, and just, so it's definitely been quite a journey to get there, but I think it's definitely opened up a lot of opportunities, you know, for the business and just in general for people themselves just to feel more comfortable in their own skin and able to kind of build better relationships at work.
Yeah. And it sounds like there's storytelling. In fact, we ran a webinar recently on the power of storytelling, and I'm really taken by that about how that really shifted that ability for people to be able to feel like they could speak up and that others do go through this as well. And it doesn't matter how tough you might look, as you say, others experience it as well. Have there been other things that you've put in place that have also helped to encourage conversation or to normalize well-being?
Yeah, I think getting leaders to share what they do to look after their well-being. I know that question's coming up later on around what I do, but I think you know, it's also really useful to get you know, to sort of have that maybe a bit of a structure around getting senior leaders in the business out and speaking to team members about what they do and role modeling and things like that, and actually role modeling, even having a conversation about well-being and about mental health and saying, yeah, look, for me, I go and run on the beach or walk the dog or whatever it is. And that's one of my ways, you know, and highlighting the five ways to well-being and talking to, you know, people about these sorts of basic tools that are readily available. You know, it just kind of highlights to people that actually, oh, yeah, they might be this, you know, leader who does this and that, but actually they still have the same challenges that everyone else does. So that's, it kind of makes it more personal and more accessible and hopefully, you know, opens up some of those doors that are pretty hard to open sometimes. Yeah.
And so I think it sounds like to me that level of influence you have as a leader is something that you're really aware of. So more broadly, as a leader, what do you see your role as in influencing and fostering well-being at work?
Oh, look, I think it's kind of multifaceted, and I wouldn't say that I'm overly accomplished either. You know, it's obviously still a work in progress and things that are, you know, quite challenging. But I think definitely as a leader, you know, you've no matter whether you're a boss of a company or whether you're managing a team or a leader within a team, you know, even in an informal way, you know, it's about encouraging the conversations and role modeling and having the courage to you know, take the initiative, which can be quite difficult because it's not something that we're all readily able to talk about always. But you know, I think and then also where you've got the ability to influence work design. It's ensuring that you're mindful of how, you know, work is designed, and are you actually fulfilling your responsibilities as a manager in terms of ensuring that there's a sufficient resources in place to do the work in a sustainable way, where you're not relying on people's discretionary effort continuously, or you know, all your people are working at 100% or 110% all the time, and that you need to have, you know, an eye on, you know, and hey, look, business is challenging, and particularly, you know, our industry is challenging. There will be times where we need to all pull together and work hard to get things done. But equally, you know, we need to have those downtimes as well, and we also need to be making sure that we're ensuring that the resources are there, and we're doing our planning and our you know, work up front to you know, manage the work properly, so that it's not impacting on people's well-being negatively. You know, I think they're probably the things that jump out. me, you know, in terms of what leaders need to be doing, I guess. Yeah.
So being really proactive is obviously a really important part of that, and making sure that, as you said, people have the support both from the work side, but also, as we were talking to earlier, that normalizing as much as possible. We've talked a little bit about psychological safety and people being able to feel like they can come to work and be themselves at work. Tell me a little bit about what your understanding of that has been in terms of the construction industry and how you've facilitated that at work.
Yeah, I think, you know, it is quite challenging because often, you know, we link health and safety practices and processes to, you know, extend that to well-being. And we look at well-being through a health and safety lens, and particularly a safety one lens, which, you know, is a compliance-based safety, of course, you know, where we've got a checkbox and an audit for everything and a permit to fill out and a process around things. And that way of thinking around safety, you know, can be quite blame focused, where we, you know, have an incident or an accident, for example, in a health and safety sense. And of course, you know, the finger of blame comes out as to whose fault it was, who's to blame, who's done this. And people automatically then go into protection mode, and they don't want to come forward with solutions, and there's no learning that comes out of that event. And unfortunately, you know, that's kind of been a feature in safety, which has kind of impeded our you know, the ability for people to feel safe themselves coming forward when they've stuffed up or made a mistake or have an issue or see an improvement, an area for improvement. So I think it's trying to break through some of those barriers that are probably sitting there, and working more in a safety two environment where we want to actually engage. We want to find out what the work's all about, learn, you know, as leaders, we want to have a learning mindset that we don't know everything. The other people doing the work have the answers. And so, you know, what are the challenges, and really get out into the front line and try and understand some of these things, you know, and doing that through, you know, so that's where I guess interpersonal relationships are really important. And, you know, taking time to develop those interpersonal relationships and do the groundwork so that, you know, when those tricky moments come up where people feel like, I don't know if Hugh's going to like this because, you know, he's not done this very well. I'm not sure how it's going to go down. But actually, I know I've had a few chats with him, so I feel like I'm okay to raise this, you know, kind of thing. So, you build those relationships so that you kind of feel like people can actually bring things forward, or they feel they know you well enough to be able to go, yeah, I know he's not going to take this the wrong way, you know, take it in the right spirit. And I guess it's about having all those sorts of conversations and discussions so you know your people. And obviously, you know, as larger the organization gets and as it's growing, the more difficult that is. So you're relying on leadership skills throughout the business in order to enable that, and actually having leaders who are trained and understand, you know, what it takes to build those sorts of relationships and engage, you know, truly engage with people, you know, where they're at, you know, rather than kind of being the conventional manager pushing paper around and not really caring about it. So, you know, there is that care part there that's linked to the values of the business and the culture in the business. So, you know, I think there's quite a few strands to it, but at the end of the day, it just comes down to giving a shit and actually, you know, people who kind of give a shit about each other and then having those discussions. And I know it sounds a bit crude, but it's probably, you know, quite a good way of putting it. Care would be another word for that. You know, if you've got that, embedded in the organization where, you know, you can build that level of comprehension and understanding, then, you know, hopefully you can get that flow of information and it's working quite well. And people do feel safe to speak up. So I guess that's, you know, my thoughts on that one in terms of creating that psychological safety. And then, of course, there's doing what you say you're going to do, you know, which is sort of what we all talk about a lot. You know, if you say you're going to fix something, actually try and, you know, actually fix it, and feedback and things like that, if it couldn't be fixed, and all that kind of thing builds trust in an organization, which is really important to develop that.
One of the things that you said in your response then made me think of a letter we had a couple of weeks ago in our weekly newsletter, which was around the importance of visibility for leaders and being seen. And I think that really leads to what you're talking about, building those relationships. So on that note, what are some of the things that you've done to be seen and to build those relationships? Because I imagine there'll be some leaders who'll be listening to this going, okay, that sounds like something I should be doing, but how do I do that?
Yeah, sometimes it's really hard because, you know, you don't want to show people that you don't know stuff, because then people go, oh, this guy, you know, what, how's he ended up in that position when he doesn't know how to do this that I'm doing, you know, this task that I'm doing. But I think it's about just embracing that and going, hey, look, you know, you won't know everything. So getting out into the field and actually asking the experts in the front line how, you know, how it's going, what challenges they are overcoming, what are the risks that they see, what are the things that the company could do to support them better, you know, all that kind of thing actually gets people to turn around and think, oh shit, maybe, you know, maybe they do actually care about, you know, what I'm doing and how I'm doing it and trying to improve things. So, you know, I think that's a really good step, is just to get out there and really just look at things objectively with an open mind and ask lots of questions, you know, and without kind of predetermining the answer. And that can be quite challenging, as I say, because, you know, people don't want necessarily be seen to not know things. So it takes, again, a bit of courage just to step out of your comfort zone a little bit and even get your boots and your gloves on and get in there and help with the work, you know, and just say, hey, I've never done this before. How do you do this? You know, show me what you do, you know, and show a genuine an interest, and it kind of goes a long way.
And so I imagine also with some of our wellbeing champions or wellbeing managers that are listening, they'll also be thinking, how do I get my leaders to do this? So yeah. If you were in their shoes, you know, what do you think would be helpful, or what might influence some of the leaders in their business to think like you do?
Yeah, look, I think a good step, you know, a lot of leaders have got pretty good egos, you know, arguably. So a good start is maybe get them talking about themselves, you know, and say, hey, how do you look after your well-being? You know, you're so busy, you got so many things on the go. How do you look after yourself? You know, what well-being challenges do you face? And then say, hey, would you be, you know, once they maybe discuss that on a one-on-one basis, perhaps say, hey, would you be willing to share that at our next team meeting? Because I think, you know, people would really appreciate, you know, to hear from you how you do that, because, you know, that's, you gave some really good examples and it was quite interesting. And then, you know, asking those sorts of questions, and it will depend on the individual, of course, that you're dealing with as to what those questions should be, and trying to sort of devise a route around that and to get people to open up. And I think it's just, you know, also being mindful that, you know, being in leadership roles, particularly, you know, senior leadership roles and things like that, it can be quite a lonely place, you know, where you got your own, you know, unique kind of well-being challenges, and considering, you know, or asking the question, well, how can we as a team support your well-being? You know, where are the areas that you find, you know, those pinch points, and what are the signs that we can look out for to see when you need support? And what can we be doing, you know, and it's kind of just turning things around sometimes as well, that can enable them to kind of think differently and go, well, how do, and then maybe they might start to question themselves about how they can support the team better, because they can start to recognize some of those signs, you know, which probably I had, you know, when I was in, as I say, in the vice, you know, in you know, previous years where, yeah, I felt under pressure, didn't really understand what was going on. I knew something wasn't quite right, but I, you know, couldn't put my finger on it. Probably nowadays, with the knowledge that I've got, I guess, so accumulated over time, that I know what it is, and I can recognize those things, and I can talk about it. But, you know, often people are sort of in that phase where they're not really able to recognize or understand what's happening. So, you know, I think there are a couple of things. The other sort of aspect is also having that conversation around, well, what are the benefits? You know, obviously. You know, and that's kind of a, I guess, a conventional approach is go and say, hey, you know, if we engage our team, and we've got a more engaged team, you know, we're going to have productivity benefits, we're going to have efficiency gains, we're going to have a more engaged team, they're going to come up with answers rather than risk problems. How can we enable that sort of environment? And then, you know, have a conversation about, hey, you know, when things were working really, really well, can you imagine a time when everything was flowing really nicely at work and the team was kicking all their goals? What was that like? What were the conditions that were present when that occurred? And what's missing now? You know, what are the things that are missing now? How do we replicate that scenario that we had? And often it comes back to, you know, team cohesion and communication and all these sorts of, you know, things like having the right resources, having the right skills in the team. That more than often will come back to those sorts of themes. And you go, well, you can't really have cohesion without people feeling psychologically safe. You can't have that kind of environment where people aren't feeling well in themselves. So I think, you know, you can start to maybe influence up a little bit by, you know, provoking some of these sorts of conversations, I suppose.
Do you think leaders, and we have seen this in some of the research that's come through, you think some leaders have a rose-tinted view of how well people are actually doing?
Oh, I think everybody does. And it's not probably that whole thing where you ask somebody, "Oh, how are you?" You know, ask them in the smoker room in the morning. "Oh, I'm great." You know, but you know, it's just an automatic response, isn't it? So I think, yeah, look, everybody probably does, and you know, I think that's just natural human tendency, and but again, it's just about, you know, how authentic are we. And how willing are we to actually, you know, have give an honest answer, you know, around that question. And I guess when there's always that power distance factor that comes in when you know, somebody more senior comes in and asks how you are, and you want to put on a good front and, you know, be that person who's positive or whatever. And so you're not necessarily going to share. But again, that comes back to that relationship that leader has built with you and you've built with that person, as to, you know, how authentic and how honest you'll be at that moment in time. So, you know, I guess there's some of the challenges that that exist in, you know, and particularly in large organizations where, you know, there's lots of layers of management and so on.
Mm. And probably an extension of that also, and I'm really mindful that this is different in different industries, but perhaps in construction, a lot of people who are in quite senior positions are older generations. So have you found there's been a generational challenges as well around engaging people in mental health and wellbeing conversations?
Yeah, look, and I think there's that old school attitude you touched on, you know, where, yeah, take a, you know, a cup of concrete or a concrete pill or whatever and get over it and yada, 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 you know. But I think we sort of society, I don't know, my mind anyway, feels like it's moved on a bit from that. We're kind of, you know, grappling with some of these challenges, we're trying to understand them, and we're trying to kind of be able to communicate about them better. You definitely find some attitudes that are pretty hard to deal with and hard to change. And often, you know, if you're surrounded by people like that, then you got to wonder whether you're in the right organization. To be honest, it's probably, you know, a good question to ask. Am I, you know, actually ever going to make an impact here? Because there's so many people that are not, you know, even interested in this discussion. So, you know, that's probably an honest kind of place to go, but, you know, not ideal. But but it's kind of the tone is set from the top in terms of the culture of the business and willingness for leaders and people in senior positions to actually lean into this stuff and see the benefits with it. I think, you know, it does come back to that journey of trying to you know, get them to share about what they do, acknowledge maybe, yeah, that they're also impacted by it, by say mental health or, you know, other sort of factors around well-being, and that you know, in a roundabout way, trying to, you know, maybe change their mindset a little bit through some of the things I've spoken about earlier. And then, you know, try to turn the conversation around. Well, can you see the benefit if we ... you know, if we tried to empower the team a bit more, if we engage people or they felt a bit more engaged, that might actually have a benefit to the business, you know, and how can we sort of harness that and so on. So, you know, definitely, you know, challenging conversations, no two ways about it, but I think there's still a lot of opportunities there to sort of unlock on the journey. So, yeah.
I like that way of thinking about it, as unlocking the business, because I know that's one thing we often find in organizations is leaders see business performance over this side and well-being over this side as two completely different things. And what you're talking about and the evidence would show is that the two are really closely aligned, interwoven, in fact. Again, not all leaders understand that. So what are some of the messages that you would share with them around that?
Yeah, look, I think it's similar to the health and safety thing. You know, I guess in the past, people have viewed that as being a thing on its own. You know, we look at safety and we report on that, but it's, you know, got very little to do with operational performance. When actually what we know is that it's just work. It's just about what the work is, and the work's either good or it's not good, or, you know, some aspects of the work that need improvement. And we know that, like, the more engaged people are, And the more interested they are, more passionate they are about what they're doing, the more likely the work's going to be good. And you know, so it's all, I think, part integrated with that. And it's about having that operational excellence focus that what we're delivering is really good work. And, you know, we want to help people to feel good through delivering that work. So, I think it's got to be looked at as one thing, which is work effectively and not out on its own. And, you know, and looking at, you know, when people think of wellbeing initiatives, they're thinking about gym memberships and fruit baskets and yoga classes and all that stuff. But actually, you know, that's nice, but it's not going to really shift the dial. What we need to be looking at is the design of the work, the system that we're operating in, the relationships that we're having throughout, you know, the supply chain, from clients to companies delivering projects and their supply chains, and also, you know, how the work is designed to really kind of enable better work, I suppose. And I think that's some of the things which is great, you know, that are really being looked at now, you know, in terms of, you know, I guess those aspects and trying to shift the dial at the system level, which is where I guess we'll hopefully see the benefits.
And to quote a New Zealand ad, it was on TV a while ago now, you know, good things take time. So obviously these are not an overnight endeavor. How long has this journey been for you and Pipeline and Civil? And, you know, what does the journey ahead look like?
Yeah, look, I think it's just a journey without an end, isn't it? So, I mean, you start where you started and you just keep persevering until you feel like you've got somewhere which is reasonably comfortable. Then you think of something else that you need to work on. So I don't think there's any end point. I think it's just particularly just being open to learning how we can continually improve. For us, you know, I guess I was very fortunate. I came into a business, you know, nearly 10 years ago, which had a very strong values base, you know, that was instilled from the foundation documents of the company. You know, and our values, you know, are part of our constitution, and being an employee-owned business, all the shareholders who are actually out delivering the work as well have bought into that and, you know, signed up to that. And, you know, so I guess, you know, when we look at our business objectives and our strategy as a business, you know, we're not kind of looking at quarter on quarter returns. You know, we're not looking at thrashing everybody to, you know, appease the stock market. I suppose we're a privately held business, so we can, I guess, set our own destiny. But we very much shape it around, you know, sustainable, you know, good work, doing it safely, planning our work well, having good, you know, obviously delivering really good quality services and products and things like that, and building trust and openness with our clients and within our own teams, and you know, our other values, one of our key values around care, which is looking out for, you know, our mates, and building a positive culture and around investing in our in successors and things like that. So, you know, if we do all that, we'll be a successful business. And I think, you know, it's about, I guess, we often go back to those values, and, you know, that's what our, I guess, what guides what we're doing. So, I think in terms of where we are on that journey, you know, we're a bit down the road, but there's obviously, plenty more to be doing. And as I say, we're not certainly, you know, not perfect, but, you know, we're still, you know, striving to do better, I suppose. Yeah.
So it's definitely a process of years, isn't it? The months.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. Absolutely. And hey, you know, everyone's going to be on a different point along the path, but, you know, just taking a step forward is there the wins you got to celebrate. And, you know, regardless of how far away you are from your destination, I guess just perseverance is the key.
Thanks again for listening today. It's been great to have you along. If you're keen to join the Revolutionaries of Wellbeing, head to Row Wellbeing, that's ROW Wellbeing.com, and follow the links to sign up. If you're in our community, thanks again. And we look forward to catching up with you really soon.